Looking inside, looking inside, I wake up to you, wake up to your love. Looking inside, looking inside, I wake up to you, wake up to your love. Disappearing into you. Disappearing into you. Disappearing into you. Looking inside, looking inside, I wake up to you, wake up to your love. Looking inside, looking inside, I wake up to you, wake up to your love. Disappearing to you. Disappearing into you. Disappearing into you. Looking inside, looking inside, I wake up to you, wake up to your love. Looking inside, looking inside, I wake up to you, wake up to your love. Disappearing into
Beloved Book One. Isan said to Kyozan, I have heard that when you were with Hayakujo, if you were asked about one, you could answer about 10. Is that true? I wouldn't like to say, replied Kyozan. Attempt to say something that expresses the highest point of Buddhism, said Isan. Kyozan just opened his mouth, about to speak, when Isan shouted, Quats! Twice more, Kyozan went to speak, and twice Isan silenced him with a shout. Kyozan bowed his head and wept, saying, The former teacher said that when I met another, I would gain enlightenment. Today I have met him. It is 3 years since I began to seek for Buddhahood, and it was no more than looking after a cow.
Manisa, I have told you yesterday that Isan is trying hard to be a rebel against Mata's will. Not that he does not love Mata's will. But Matazu has become a tradition. And he wants to get away from the traditional mind, because tradition kills everything. It makes the dead more significant than the living. It is such an absurd effort to force living human beings to worship the dead, rather than finding the more deeper layers of life within themselves. Giving them teddy bears outside, consolations, ugly consolations, degrading consolations. So when Buddha became a tradition, Bodhidharma revolted against the tradition, not against Buddha. Who can revolt against the Buddha? The Buddha is your very nature. You can go as far away as possible, but you cannot go far away enough. Your nature will be with you. Buddha is your highest peak of consciousness. We are not using the word Buddha in its historical sense. Gautam the Buddha was one of the Buddhas. The title Buddha does not denote to him personally. It is simply a quality of witnessing and arriving at home. Certainly he has become the symbol, and a beautiful symbol. If you don't make it a tradition, if you keep it alive, if you don't start worshipping it, but just watching the beauty of it, the silence of it, the grace of it, and reminding yourself this all belongs to you too. So when Bodhidharma revolted, he revolted not against Buddha. Nobody can revolt against the Buddha. He revolted against the scholars and the pundits and the ritualistic religion that has grown in the wake after Gautam Buddha was gone. But Bodhidharma became in the same way a tradition. It was very difficult to revolt against the Buddhist tradition, but Bodhidharma maintained a tremendous high quality. His rebellion brings him to the same height as Gautam Buddha. And he was capable enough, a genius mind, to create a totally different atmosphere for the seeker on the path. But as he died, again the same thing happened. Bodhidharma became a prototype to be followed, to be imitated. Matazu could not tolerate this stupidity. He has to revolt. It is not against Bodhidharma or Buddha. It is against the inertia that tradition creates. But to revolt, you need immense courage, articulateness, and a great mastery, not only of yourself, but of mind as such. And mind expresses in thousands of ways. A master has to deal with thousands of types, and he has to be capable to encounter each type spontaneously. Matazu maintained it even better than Bodhidharma. Matazu's revolution against all tradition, against all sutras, was an immense event in the history of consciousness. He burned the sutras. He simply forced the disciples not to look out, but to look in. Isan is trying to revolt against Matazu now, because Matazu has become a tradition. But Isan has not the quality of a Matazu or Bodhidharma. He is a very intelligent person, and he can see that the tradition is becoming rotten. New sources of life should be made available, otherwise it will become a dead tree. Flowers have stopped blossoming on it. Intellectually, he could see the point, but he was himself not the type of a master who could manage such a vast phenomenon. Rebelling against a tradition is rebelling against 4 million years of mind. Its whole structure. And it is possible to convince people only if you have such a presence, such magnetic force, that when people come to you, they are ready to drop the whole past just for your sake. Isan was not capable of such a great love affair. That's why yesterday I told you his sutras are humble, simple. But they don't have the splendor and the majesty. And today you will see that he has fallen back on Mata's. He could not find a substitute to Mata's. He wanted it to break away with the tradition that Matazu's life has created. But he was not greater than Matazu. Only a greater man could have managed, and Matazu is impossibly greater. It is almost impossible to find a man who is greater than Matazu. His inventiveness, his creativeness, his absolute strangeness in the world. Nobody has been able to surpass him. Isan has the longing to break away with the tradition. He tried, but he could see that he is failing. It is not working. He was intelligent enough to see it, that he cannot substitute anything in place of Matazu's methods, shouting, hitting, or throwing people back out of the doors, or closing the door on the people's face. He could not find what to do. People have become accustomed to expect from the master the unexpectable. He was a good teacher. But goodness is not the point. Matazu was a very dramatic teacher. Very magnetic. Lived in a way nobody has ever lived. Walked like a cow his whole life, and looked like a tiger all around, and he has those eyes and the face of a tiger. And also the innocence and the beauty of a cow. A strange combination. And he never bothered about any conformity, any respectability, any mannerism. He acted out spontaneously. Even he was not aware what is going to happen. But whatever is going to happen spontaneously is the right. No man has lived so spontaneously. Obviously, he looked absurd, a little mad to the outsiders. But he attracted the seekers tremendously. They could see behind the eyes of a tiger the eyes of a Buddha. They could see behind his outer behavior the inner beauty, the inner joy, the inner splendor, and the possibility to get from him the transmission of the lamp. Isan was a totally different kind of person. He tried to revolt against the tradition of Mataji, but finally he had to fall back on the same techniques that Mataji has created. They never existed before. Isan said to Kayozan, "I have heard that when you were with Hayakujo, if you were asked about one, you could answer about 10. Is that true?" Kayozan is Isan's chief disciple and finally is going to be his successor. He is under preparation. He is almost chosen by Isan to be his successor. Undeclared, but it was known to all the disciples that Kayozan is going to be the next master. Hence, Kayozan was allowed the privilege of asking all kinds of questions, because he will have to face the same kinds of questions when he becomes the successor. In this question he is asking, "I have heard that when you were with your master Hayakujo, if you were asked about one, you could answer about 10. Is that true?" He's saying, "I have heard that you were so much a man of wisdom that if one question was asked, you could answer in 10 different ways the same question." Your multidimensional wisdom was very much appreciated by Hayakujo. I would not like to say any attempt to say something that expresses the highest point of Buddhism, said Isan, the highest point of Buddhism cannot be said. Not even one time. There is no question of answering it 10 times in 10 different ways. To answer even one time is to commit one mistake. To answer 10 times is to commit 10 mistakes. Only silence is the answer. If the highest point of Buddha's experience, his enlightenment, is concerned, Kayozan just opened his mouth, about to speak, when Isan shouted, "Quads!" Quads is just a sound, but it means indirectly, "Shut up." But "shut up" is meaningful. Hence it is avoided. It does not have that quality of quads. Quads is not part of any language. It is simply shouting to produce the result of shutting his mouth. He has asked enough. Now he should not open his mouth anymore. Twice more, Kayozan went to speak, and twice Isan silenced him with his shout. Now shout is an invention of Matazu. It is very difficult to create new devices, new methods. It needs a totally different kind of personality. One can be enlightened, that is one thing. One can follow the well-trodden path, the well-experimented methods, and can be of immense help to people. But if he wants to be an individual peak, if he wants to stand on his own, then he needs the qualities of a Buddha himself. And as time passed, it became even more and more difficult to find new ways. Great masters have passed before, and they have almost exhausted every possibility of finding new methods. He relaxed back. He understood it well that he is enlightened, but he cannot be a rebel. And to fight against Matazu is impossible. Even to think what you will do against Matazu. He has simply finished all things. Whatever you do will look cheaper, will not look so dramatic and so novel and so original as Matazu. Finally, he has to go back to Matazu. These shouts are the steps of going back, because Matazu has invented shouts. Before him, shouts were not used. sticks were used, the masters will beat the disciple. Those sticks don't hurt. Just few days before, I have received one Zen stick from Korea. I am waiting for the first German enlightened man, Stonehead Niskriya, to give that to him. It is a very good device. It is a bamboo cut in between in two parts. On one side you can hold it, and beyond that it is cut in two parts. So you can hit, it makes much sound but does not hurt anybody. The point was the same, but Matazu, because suddenly hitting a person who is asking a relevant question, it stopped his mind that what is the matter? It is incomprehensible by the mind. And that is the point, that the mind should be silent even for a moment and you will have a glimpse. When for the first time these anecdotes were translated into other languages, people simply laughed at these anecdotes. Constitute a religion? It seems so strange reading that the master hits the disciple and the disciple becomes suddenly enlightened. One could not understand the rationale of it. How it can happen that the master has hit the disciple and the disciple bowed down in deep respect and gratitude? It is possible. You can understand it. Even for a single moment, if your mind stops completely by any method, you will have a glimpse of your own innermost nature. And that glimpse is so beautiful. That glimpse is such a majesty, such a treasure. It is your eternity. The master has shown you the way that the mind has to stop thinking. For a moment you have seen the path, now follow on. But Matazu found it even better than hitting. Shouting. Because hitting on somebody's head is not necessary that his mind will stop thinking. The mind may even start thinking more that what is the matter? Why I am being hit? I have asked a relevant question, and what kind of stupidity is this? But when a master shouts, the shout goes deeper into you than any hitting can go. Hitting can only touch your body, your head, but shouting can go piercing like a spear, and your very heartbeat may stand for a moment. Mataji's great contribution was shouting. And certainly shouting goes deeper in stopping the mind than any hitting can do it. You can see the difference. Hitting is a material phenomenon. Shouting is psychological. And to stop mind, some psychological hit is needed. Shouting is a kind of hit, invisible to your eyes, but it hits the mind completely, shakes it up, leaves it in a kind of amazement. He has come from far away, hearing about Mataji, his greatness, that hundreds of people have become enlightened through Mataji. Thousands of people lived in his monastery. A person who has traveled from miles comes to Mataji, asks a very relevant question. And never thinks that this man is going to shout or to jump upon him and sit on his chest. And looking into his eyes, ask, "Do you get it?" All that the person gets is a stoned mind. But in that stoned mind, there is hidden a revelation of his own nature. He may have tried hard to find it. The mind is almost a vast jungle of thoughts. You can go on and on. It is not a small phenomenon. To take you out from the mind instantly, shouting was a very great device. But only a great master can do it. It is not for everybody to do it. And Ishan wanted to bring something new, but failed. These shouts so that he has fallen back on the old devices of Mataji. Twice more Kayozan went to speak, and twice Ishan silenced him with a shout. Kayozan bowed his head and wept, saying, "The former teacher said that when I met another, I would gain enlightenment. Today I have met him. It is 3 years since I began to seek for Buddhahood, And it was no more than looking after a cow. These sounds worked. Kaozan has been with some teacher. But a teacher is not a master. A teacher can give you all the instructions that are written in the scriptures. He can make you very knowledgeable. And he has made Kaozan very knowledgeable. But those days were days of great honesty. And particularly about truth, nobody tried to deceive. The teacher said that I am only a teacher. When you meet the master, you will become enlightened. With me, you can become only more and more knowledgeable, a great scholar, a great intellectual. Because I have not found the truth myself. I am searching for the master myself, who can provoke me, who can wake me up. In the days of Gautama Buddha, this country has seen a tremendous phenomenon. Thousands of people moving around the country searching for the master. They will live with teachers, and when they will find that he is only a teacher, and the teacher himself will say to them that whatever I could tell you, whatever I have heard, I have told you. Now you move on. Even Gautama Buddha, for 6 years before his enlightenment, went to many teachers. And those teachers were in a very awkward position, because they were very well-known teachers. Thousands of followers. But the reason of their remaining undisclosed was that no disciple was following absolutely what they were saying. So the disciples thought it is our fault. We are not following totally what is being said. But Buddha created a trouble. He did a little more than those teachers had asked. He created in those 6 years for many teachers immense embarrassment. They had to accept to him that I am not enlightened myself. And whatever I knew was only a scholarship. Nobody has exposed me because nobody has tried me. They listened, they were happy, they accumulated knowledge, they became scholars. But you are not interested in scriptures, you are not interested in scholarship, you are not interested in knowledge. You insist that I want to see the truth. So whatever they said is strange ascetic practices Buddha went through. You won't believe the last teacher that he left has told him that he should reduce his food, one meal a day, and only the quantity should be which can be held in two hands, cupped. It is not much a quantity. And then go on reducing it bit by bit till you come to a single rice. Buddha did that. A statue exists in which he is just an skeleton. All the flesh is gone because it took 3 months to come to the point where he was taking only one rice per day. What one rice can do? The teacher had never thought that any man will be able to do this process, this fasting. But Buddha performed it perfectly and he asked him, anything more? The teacher has tears in his eyes and he said, now I have to accept my defeat. I am not enlightened myself. But I have been giving such practices to people that they never can complete. That has been saving my face and my grace. You have exposed me. Now my advice is that you move on. Thousands of people were moving all around in search of a master. There were thousands of teachers, but very rare to find a master who has truth as his experience. Buddha got enlightened in a very strange way. The day the master said, you have to move on. I am only a teacher, not a master. I was pretending and I am very sorry. He was too tired. Just bones have remained. And he was sitting under a Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya. The name of Bodh Gaya comes from Gautam Buddha's becoming enlightened there. Bodh means enlightenment. Just because of Buddha, the great city came into existence, because thousands of people wanted to live there. meditate under the same tree where Buddha had meditated. Try to do the same walking meditation by the side of the temple that one king has raised behind the tree as a memorial to Gautam Buddha's enlightenment. He was taking a bath by a nearby river, Niranjana. It is a very small river. In the summer, it shrinks so small that you can walk. It is not even 1 foot deep. And he was taking a bath, but he was so weak that even that small current he could not cross. He has to hang by a branch of a tree for a few moments to gather some energy so that he can get out of the river. That experience made it clear to him that just by fasting you can kill yourself, but you cannot attain enlightenment. This is a good gradual process of suicide, but it is not a process of samadhi. If I cannot pass this small stream, what about the mythological river, vast river that divides this world from the other heavenly world? If I cannot cross Niranjana, a small river, what are the possibilities for me? I will not be able to cross that vast river that divides these two worlds. It is almost like an ocean. It is mythology, but in his mind, at that time, up to that time, there was only mythology, philosophy. He was not yet enlightened. But hanging with the branch or the root of the tree, he thought that I have been wasting my time. He came out. It was a full moon night and he was so weak that he could not go in the town that day to beg. So he remained under the tree, but by chance one woman, Sujata, her name Sujata, means well born or born in a high class society. And I have discussed with Buddhist scholars that her name simply makes that she is born in a low caste society. You can see it in India, the blind man is called Kamal Nayan, lotus eyes. If you have eyes, nobody will call you lotus eyes. That is reserved for the blind man, not to insult him. Sujata cannot be a high class woman. Otherwise, she will not have that name. That name suggests that she comes from the lowest Sudra, the untouchables. As a consolation, they give good names. In India, when somebody dies, they say he has become beloved of God. And what we all are doing here, only dead become beloved of God. God seems to be a kind of cannibal. More people die, God is more happy, of course. More beloveds are coming. When the corpse of a dead man is taken from his home to the funeral pyre, it is called Mahayatra, great journey. It is not more than 1 mile or 2 miles. It is nothing of the great journey. And poor fellow has died. But reading, you may think he has gone on a great journey. Just to hide truth, man has always been clever with words. This woman Sujata, according to me, is a Harijan. And only Harijans will come to such a poor place near the Niranjana River. She has been worshipping the tree, and only lower classes worship the trees, not the richer. She has promised the tree that if a boy is born to her, she will bring for the tree many sweets, many flowers. And this was a coincidence, just a mere coincidence, that in the full moon night, a beautiful young man sitting under the tree, she thought, the god of the tree has come out to receive the sweets. She was immensely happy because it rarely happens that the god of the tree comes out. And she offered Buddha all the sweets. This way, after 3 months, he had a right breakfast. Otherwise, living on smaller and smaller quantities. Yesterday he has eaten only one rice. Sujata was very happy. The son was born, and the god of the tree has accepted. After eating, Buddha dropped for the first time. He has dropped 6 years before the kingdom, and all the material things of the world, all possessions, he has carried only one longing for truth. This night, the full moon in the sky, he dropped that longing too, because that longing has become his desire. And whenever there is even a small desire, mind continues. It does not matter whether you desire money or God. It does not matter whether you desire power or enlightenment. Desire is desire. And with desire, the mind remains alive. That night he dropped the last desire. 6 years he has taken all kinds of torture upon himself. It is enough. And he slept for the first time after 6 years, utterly relaxed. No desire, no belonging, no future. No hope. He simply slept without any mind, no dreams. All are settled. He is finished. There is no truth and there is no world. It is all nonsense and I have simply spoiled myself. That night he slept without a mind. And a sleep without a mind is very close to samadhi. That's how Patanjali defines it. Our ordinary waking state, below it is our dreaming state, below that is our dreamless sleep, and below that is our enlightenment, our absolute awakening. Whole night he slept in a dreamless sleep that created the opportunity, just 1 inch more, a little push more. As he opened his eyes for the first time without any desire, the last star was setting. And with the last star setting, he suddenly became aware, so full of awareness. The sun was rising outside, and the sun was also rising inside. From dreamless sleep, he has fallen to the fourth state of awakening, of Buddhahood. This Buddhahood was attained when he has dropped even the desire to be a Buddha. The mind has to be utterly empty and the master's function is to help you on the way of emptiness. Because emptiness is the opportunity of fulfillment. First, you have to be empty of everything that you know of. Only then you can be filled from the divine, by the divine. Flowers can start showering on you from unknown sources. And in emptiness, a great flame of awareness arises in you, which brings you the sense of eternity, immortality, a great peace that passeth understanding, a serenity, a silence, a blissfulness, and an ecstasy that knows no ending. You are for the first time drunk with the divine. Those were golden days in the sense that there were at least thousands of people searching. The people were poor. There was no technology and no science and no progress. But they were rich in a different sense. Their search for the innermost treasure made them the richest people of the world. And thousands attained enlightenment. And hundreds become masters of creating situations because enlightenment is your nature. It is not an achievement. You have not to go anywhere. You have to be just here and dig deep. As you pass beyond your skull and beyond your bones, your skeleton, and you find the life source from where the life is spreading to your body and the mind, immediately you have found the eternal cosmic existence, your small river of life is coming from the great ocean that surrounds you all around. It is the same ocean the trees are being nourished. It is the same ocean the birds are being nourished. It is the same ocean all life as such is being nourished. Man is the most blessed animal in the world, in the sense that he is not only capable of life, he is also capable of consciousness. Not only capable of consciousness, but also capable of becoming totally conscious. This total consciousness gives you the freedom, the salvation, and the blissfulness that you were seeking into small and mundane things where it does not exist. When it is said somebody has become enlightened, it simply means he has found the source of his life and consciousness. But by finding the source of your life and consciousness, you have found the source of all life and all consciousness. By becoming a Buddha, you have become one with all the Buddhas. There are no more any separations of bodies. There are no more any separations of time and space. If I am speaking on these Buddhas, I am not a scholar. And I am not speaking as a scholar. I am speaking according to my experience. These Buddhas, Matazu or Isan or Kyozan, cannot have another experience. It is the same ocean. Anywhere you taste it, it tastes salty. Kyozan bowed his head and wept. This weeping is of great joy. There are times when you cannot say anything through words, but you can say through tears in a moment of great love. It is so absurd to say that I love you. It is so profane. In a moment of gratitude, to say thank you is ugly. In India, it is almost impossible. The West has not known the deepest meaning in India. If a father does something for the son cannot say, "Thank you, father." He can show his gratitude by touching his feet. He can show his gratitude by his tears, but not by words. Words are very empty. Tears are very full. and tears come from your depths, words only from your mind. Kayozan bowed his head and wept out of great joy and gratitude, saying, "The former teacher said that when I met another, I would gain enlightenment. Today I have met him. It is 3 years since I began to seek for Buddhahood, and it was no more than looking after a cow. He has been with teachers, and they will give him jobs, looking after the cows, looking after the kitchen, looking after things. But without giving him any job, Isan has given him only 3 sous. And he has become enlightened. It does not mean that the people should not work. It simply means that work only around a master, a living master. Otherwise, you are just taking care of the cows. And being with a master simply means being no more. Dissolve yourself. Become utterly empty with no desire. And the blessed moment can happen just now. It does not need any great practice or any ascetic torture. It needs only going back into your uttermost depth. There you are a Buddha already. Once recognized, you know the path. It is very small. Slowly, slowly you can start bringing your Buddha from the hidden sources to your surface of life. Your every activity, your words will start having a new golden flavor. Your silences will start becoming songs. A music of a different dimension. Your ordinary walking will become like a dance. So joyful. Your whole life will be spread as a blissfulness, a drunkenness. You will live with your totality, you will love with your totality, And this life will be your last life. If you can attain enlightenment, then you don't have to wander from one womb to another womb. You have been wandering for centuries from one womb to another womb. If you become enlightened in this life, then the death will not take you into another womb. You will disappear into the cosmic light, into the cosmic fire. You will become one with the whole. You will be the whole. So Sikhi wrote, I have slept by the cold window and come back from the land of dreams. The eye of my mind has opened by itself with no need of the morning star. He is referring to the morning star of Gautam Buddha. He is saying, the eye of my mind has opened by itself with no need of the morning star. All of heaven and earth hold up, this mountain covered with snow. Where in the world is there a place for Sakya Muni to practice? Sakya Muni is another name of Gautam Buddha. That is his family name. He was a Shakya. A tribe of warriors. So he is also called Shakya Muni. Shakya who has become silent. It is a very loved name, just to call him Sakya. So Sikhi is making a very beautiful statement. I have slept by the cold window and come back from the land of dreams. Your land is the land of the dreams. So Sikhi is saying, I have come back from the land of dreams. The eye of my mind, the third eye, the eye that looks within, has opened by itself. With no need of the morning star disappearing into the blue sky. Every man has to become enlightened in his own way. Although he loves Gautam Buddha, he is saying there is no need to follow his footprints. Because no Buddha leaves footprints. A Buddha is just like a bird flying into the blue sky, leaving no footprints. All of heaven and earth hold up this mountain covered with snow. Where in the world is there a place for Sakya Muni to practice? He is making a statement in the Zen language that there is no need and there is no place in the world to practice. Why Sakyamuni practiced for 6 years unnecessarily? You can become this very moment the Buddha. Why unnecessarily practice? Where is the place and where is the time? A loving criticism of one's own master. Soseki is right, but Buddha has his own problem. He was, as far as we know, the first Buddha. Who has created a great impact on humanity. It is certainly probable that many Buddhas may have appeared before Gautama Buddha, but they have not left such an impact. Even in the times of Gautama Buddha, 8 contemporaries declared they are enlightened. And most probably they were enlightened. Few sentences that have come from Buddha and Mahavira concerning about the other 6, because they never wrote anything. And the other 6 seem to be more rebellious people. They never allowed any following. And the few statements criticizing them by Gautama Buddha and Mahavira, these 2 have remained in the memory of man. Mahavira has remained a very local figure. For very small reasons, he could not become a world figure. Otherwise, he was older than Buddha, and certainly a great individual. But he created a strange confinement for himself. First, he was naked. Now, no country would allow him naked. They don't allow me even with clothes. I can try naked. Secondly, he has strange ways. Just like Matazu, that he would have been thought by other people as insane. He remained for months on fast. In 12 years period of silence, when he remained silent, he ate only 30 days in 12 years. And he would not accept the food from anyone. He has such a strange way, but has its own meaning. In the morning, when he will be meditating, he will decide that if he knocks at a door for food and a certain situation is fulfilled, only he will accept food. Otherwise, he will go out of town. For example, if he knocks on the door and the woman is weeping, or she's doing a certain kind of work, or on the road, two cows are standing. Anything that came to his mind in the meditation, and if that condition is not fulfilled, he will go back. His idea was that if existence wants me, then he has to fulfill my conditions. If existence does not want me, I don't have anything to do here. Why I should force myself on existence? I leave it into existence's hands. A strange idea, but has great meaning. His trust into existence is absolute, that if it wanted, then good. Otherwise, I can relax. I can disappear. Why should I carry myself unnecessarily without existence needing me? It was clear to him that if existence needs me for any purpose, it will manage my life. I have left it into its hands. Now, such a man would have been in difficulty in any other country. He will not cut his hairs with a razor. He will simply pull his hairs because he will not use any kind of technology. What technology is a small razor? But it is technology. He will not use any technology. He was far ahead of Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi at least uses the spinning wheel. That is a technical thing. He did not use anything, no clothes, so there is no need for a spinning wheel. He did not use even a begging bowl. What is the need of begging bowl if all the animals can manage without begging bowls? You seem to be utterly stupid. He drank water from the river just like any dog or any animal. And he will pull down his hairs in psychology. They have a certain kind of insanity in which the insane person pulls his hairs, and particularly women. When they have a tantrum, they start pulling hairs. In any other country, Mahavir would have been thought First he is naked, secondly his strange behavior of eating, thirdly he is pulling his hairs, but he had a point in everything. But that confined his impact. It remained only a small stream in India. Now there are only 22 naked monks . It is a very small stream. But whatever was his idea behind it was absolutely clear. Even the followers of Mahavira don't discuss exactly the meaning of his nakedness. I have not come across a single scripture in 25 centuries who discusses the point about his nakedness. They simply say because he has dropped all possessions, that's why he has dropped clothes. But that is not the real thing. The real thing is his celibacy. According to him, the celibate person should live naked. Then only he can prove that he is celibate. Just think, all your celibate monks, because the whole mechanism of sex is such, an idea arises in your mind and immediately your sexual machinery starts giving you hints, and the whole society will see that what kind of celibacy is this. I don't think that any Catholic monk, the Pope, or any Shankaracharya is capable to fulfill the test of Mahavira. And his test is absolutely correct. The question is, how do we know that you are celibate? Even to think in your mind about sex will immediately affect your body, and everybody will know that you are not celibate. 25 centuries nobody has considered his scientificness about it. He is absolutely scientific, because behind the clothes you can be celibate and still enjoy dreams of making love to Sophia Loren and nobody will know. But if you are naked, then it is very difficult. The moment you start thinking of Sophia Loren, immediately your flag starts rising up. I absolutely agree with Mahavira that every celibate, if he wants to be celibate, should be naked. I am not in favor of celibacy. But if somebody wants to be celibate, then he has to follow the rules of the game. But Jaina monks perhaps are the only ones who can be said to be celibate. It takes years, 5 stages of training. Only on the last stage they can become naked, when the master allows the disciple that now you can become naked. Because the sexual center is not in the genitals, the sexual center is in the mind. Unless that center is controlled by your meditations, unless that center is purified completely of any desire, you cannot help to be naked. You will be immediately exposed. Those 6 others were also enlightened, but everybody follows his own way. Buddha used clothes, and just because Buddha used clothes, he became a worldwide phenomenon. The whole East became Buddhist. Although Mahavira was old and a very beautiful personality, but the way he proposed to live was not for everyone. It was immensely difficult. Just the clothes made the difference. There must have been other Buddhas. Mahavira is a Buddha. You have to be aware of this fact, that Jaina scriptures use both the terms for Mahavira, Jaina. Jaina means the conqueror of oneself, and Buddha, the awakened one. The Buddhist scriptures also use both the terms, Jaina, the conqueror, and Buddha, the awakened one. But by and by it became settled, because this will be confusing, it became settled that Gautama Buddha will not be called Jaina and Mahavira will not be called Buddha, to make things clear. But both are, and the other 6 perhaps were more colorful personalities, but they did not allow any followers. Obviously, if you don't allow any followers, who is going to collect your teachings, collect your life for the coming centuries? Sooner or later your names will disappear. But that was the point of those 6, that there is no need for our names to remain. Just as we disappear, our names should disappear. What is the purpose for our names to remain? Are our teachings to remain? There is a great point in it. Their insistence that there is no need for our teachings has many implications. First, that only living masters can transform human beings. Our words, our teachings won't do that. It will create only teachers. Secondly, why should we keep in bondage the coming future? We lived our life, we shared our life with our contemporaries. Now, let the future be free for new masters to take place, for new Buddhas to take place. We should not be a hindrance and we should not become a burden on the future. A tremendously rebellious attitude. These all people Soseki says, where is a place, where is a space, where is time for Sakyamuni to practice? He is against practice. I am against practice. Practice can make you only an actor. You have to be spontaneous, not disciplined and practiced. You have to be yourself in your naturalness, in your wildness, in your spontaneity. Manisha has asked, beloved Bhagwan, is our identifying with our body and our mind all that is preventing us from being one with everything? Yes, Manisha. Identification with the body, with the mind, with our possessions, with our families, with our friends, any kind of identification takes you outwards, because all your possessions will be outwards, your wife, your husband, your children. Your body is outside you. Your mind is outside you. The only thing that is not outside you is the witnessing. Just the watchfulness. That is your Buddha. Identification means losing witnessing, falling into the trap of attachment. That is our misery, that is our slavery. Now it is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. he seems to be sitting very far away. Just put the light on. Everybody has to see his rainbow-colored turban. One morning, Mad Melvin, Loony Larry, and Crazy Carl all escape from the Sunnyvale Insane Asylum. Happy as larks, as the three loonies go into town and come upon the construction site of a huge skyscraper, they look around curiously when suddenly a man in a hard hat walks up to them. "Hey, you guys," shouts Klopski, the job foreman, "get back to work and finish digging that trench." The three loonies all smile and nod in unison, then run around and start working on the trench. A couple of hours later, Klopski comes back to see how they are doing. He is shocked to find Mad Melvin digging furiously while the other two loonies are standing motionless, holding their shovels in the air. "What the hell are you doing?" screams Klopski at Loony Larry and Crazy Carl. "We are street lights," replies Loony Larry. "You must be nuts. You are fired," shouts Klopski, sending the two loonies away. But Mad Melvin stops working immediately. "No," says Klopski, "not you. You are working well. Just continue your digging." "What?" cries Mad Melvin, "in such darkness?" The Medical Corporation of America decides that there is only one way to cure AIDS, and that is with money. Lots of money. So they arrange with all three TV networks in America to have a giant AIDS telethon to take place on Saturday night. The idea is that Rock Hunk, the famous movie star, will make love to 500 women on TV while the American public phone in their pledges. On the big night, Rock Hunk gets up to 475 women and money is pouring in. Rockefeller Foundation phones in and donates millions. NASA phones in and donates the funds for the space program. Even Ronald Reagan phones in and donates Nancy's dress fund. Money is pouring in and it looks like AIDS is going to be cured for sure. But when Rock gets to 495, he passes out. They throw buckets of iced water on him and he staggers to his feet and wobbles over to the next woman. At 498, it looks like he is really finished. But the woman somehow manages to arouse him and the money keeps pouring in. But at 499, Raag passes out and no one is able to wake him up. The whole country is furious and everyone phones in and takes back their pledges. Eventually, George Bush, the host of the show, manages to revive Raag and drag him into the office. "We almost cured AIDS," said Bush. "What the hell happened?" "I just don't understand it," replies Raag. "Everything went fine this morning at the rehearsal." Nancy Reagan is walking into the White House dining room to have lunch with Ronald and discuss their retirement plans. Suddenly, Elvin Mindbender, a close family friend, races past Nancy in a suite and disappears down the hall. Nancy goes on into the dining room, sits down over a big lunch, and starts chatting to Ronnie. Meanwhile, in the Oval Office, Alvin Mindbender is frantically phoning all over the country to find Vice President Bush, who is finishing up his presidential campaign tour. 2 hours later, in Santa Fe, New Mexico, Elvin at last gets Bush on the line. "George, thank God," cries Alvin. "I have been trying to reach you for 2 hours. There has been a terrible tragedy at the White House." Meanwhile, back in the White House dining room, Nancy just had finished her banana split dessert. "Now, Ronald," she says, wiping her mouth, "I insist we take down those purple and green striped curtains in your bedroom at the ranch house." Suddenly, Elvin, still sweating buckets, bursts into the room. Seeing Nancy chatting to Ronald, he stops dead in his tracks and his jaws drops open. "Holy shit, Nancy," screams Mindbender. "What the hell are you doing? Ronald died 2 hours ago." Nancy takes a close look at the senile old president. "My goodness," she says, "how can you tell?" Nivedana. be silent. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Now look inwards with your total consciousness, with a great urgency, as if this is going to be the last moment of your life. Deeper and deeper, and you will find the path. It is a small path. Getting out of the mind, getting out of the body, and reaching to the source, which is connected with the cosmos. Its only quality is witnessing. So just witness and be a Buddha. A great silence will start falling over you. And a deep desire, a deep longing to disappear into the cosmos will be felt for the first time. A great joy, for no reason at all, will fill your whole space. This moment is precious. Even for a moment to be a Buddha is a great blessing. If you know to be a Buddha even for a single moment, you know it. You can be a Buddha 24 hours round the clock. Just remember, being a Buddha means a witness. Great flowers will start showering on you of peace, of bliss, of ecstasy. To make it more clear, Nivedana, relax. But go on holding the witness. You are not the body. You are not the mind. You are the one who is seeing the body, seeing the mind. And as your witnessing deepens, your separation from others will disappear. The Buddha auditorium starts becoming a lake of consciousness with no ripples, no distinctions. just a pure dance of bliss and ecstasy. Rejoice in it and collect as much experience of witnessing the fragrance that is surrounding you, the ecstasy gather all of them to bring back to the circumference. From the center to the circumference, you have to bring your Buddha slowly, slowly. It is a tremendous treasure. You can bring as much as you want. It is inexhaustible. At this moment you are eternal. You are immortal. You are one with the cosmos. This evening has been a beautiful evening. On its own accord, but you have made it more golden. By your silence witnessing, by your joyfully relaxing into the whole. Before Nivedano calls you back, collect as much fragrance, as many flowers. Nivedano, come back, but come back as a Buddha, with the same grace, with the same silence, with the same beauty. Sit down for a few moments, just recollecting where you have been, on what golden path you have moved. Forward and backward, and how much of witnessing you have brought from your very life source. This witnessing has to be carried around the clock. A day certainly comes when you don't need to meditate, when Buddha remains in every circumstance present, fully radiant, all actions are His actions, you are no more. The Buddha sings, the Buddha dances, the Buddha smiles. You have become just a passage for the Buddha. That day is not far away. It can happen any moment. Be prepared. It is not a practice. It is simply creating the right moment for the spring to come and bring all that is possible to your potentiality. Thousands of flowers, okay, Manisha?
Yes, Papa.
This precious moment, breathing your silence, showering your love on the Buddha in me, your love on the Buddha in me. This precious moment, breathing your silence. Showering your love on the Buddha in me, your love on the Buddha in me. This precious moment, breathing your silence, showering your love on the Buddha in me, your love on the Buddha in me, your love.